this very day in 2002, The Who's John Entwistle was found dead in his hotel room in Las Vegas. He had cocaine in his system. The death was ruled accidental. He was 57. He was on medication for a heart condition. With Pete Townsend's power chords effectively providing rhythm for the group, Entwistle's intricate bass lines essentially provided the group's melodic lead on songs ranging from My Generation to The Real Me to You Better You Bet. He moved up and down the fretboard, providing bottom and filling the gaps between Pete Townsend's bursts of guitar. His solid, nimble-fingered presence anchored the force that was a group known as The Who, of which I don't know any of you are a fan, but I was a big fan of The Who growing up.
I'd say I'm a Who fan.
Yeah. Very nice. Anyway, that was I Can't Explain there. It is 26 to 5. The panel, nothing wrong with bare feet, says someone. Compare when you last washed your feet with when you last washed the soles of your shoes. That's an interesting point.
There you go.
I haven't washed the soles of my shoes for a long time.
I haven't washed the soles of my feet either, to be fair, but...
Well, you do in your shower.
Oh, yeah, I suppose you do, just by default, yeah.
Glenn in Gisborne says, bare feet is great. Your sole gets massaged. You wear boots all day at work, so I'm bare feet as soon as possible. Doing the poo run, this is four dogs, wearing gummies, you don't know you have missed one. Bare... Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Bare feet straight away and so much easier to clean than gumboots. When I moved to London as an 18-year-old straight out of Pekka Pekka Beach, I thought nothing of strolling to the off-licence in bare feet. I literally stopped traffic as people stopped to yell at me. Very interesting.
I think you're a homeless person. That's what they think you are overseas when you've got bare feet. A
lot of lunch break ones. Wallace and the panel, two things. I used to have my lunch break at my desk and was physically dragged away from it to have a proper break by my boss. But a long time ago in the English civil service, when people were allowed a cigarette break, it was a colleague who made a point in taking a quick 10-minute crossword break, but was banned for that as was not allowed, says Michael in Christchurch.
That's weird.
And primary teachers often have no lunch break, and because they do, supervision duty, sport and in-class responsibilities may go from 8:30 a.m. until 3 p.m. with all but a fleeting toilet break. Not a recipe for good health. Ka kite, says Anna Lee. So thank you very much for all your feedback.
Do you want to take a break now? Like just have a bit of, 10 minutes of silence while you...
And you'll have a bit of a chat.
10 minutes of silence.
Just while you get your head back on, Wallace.
Yeah, okay, what do you reckon?
I don't know.
Maybe not, maybe next year.
Okay, all right.
Now to this, New South Wales, Greater Sydney is to extend lockdown by another 4 weeks. Greater Sydney first went into lockdown on the 26th of June. Started as a two-week lockdown. What began as a two-week lockdown at the end of last month for the over 5 million people in Greater Sydney will now stretch until at least August the 28th. There are concessions to allow construction to resume from Saturday in non-hotspot areas and rapid antigen testing of Year 12 students, meaning they can return to school. There are no plans for face-to-face learning for students in other years, reports the Sydney Morning Herald today. Premier Gladys Berejiklian said on Tuesday that the state had a challenging month or 6 weeks ahead, and there have been large-scale anti-lockdown protests across the Tasman as people get exhausted by the restrictions, along with a conspiracist sentiment by some. There were 177 new cases, 46 of these infectious while in community, the key number which needs to go down. And to talk about this is Bryn Tilley, who is a Kiwi living in Sydney. Kia ora, Bryn.
Kia ora. G'day.
First up, how is life in Sydney right now?
Oh, look, I'd be lying if I said it was a breeze. Tough times. Yeah, like you say, we've just had an announcement by the Premier that it's going to be the lockdown's going to be extended for another 4 weeks at least. And those in the know, it could well extend well into September. It's this uncertainty which is really weighing heavy on so many people. It reached a bit of a breaking point over the weekend, as you're probably well aware, with the protesters, the march in the CBD, which caused a fair amount of concern to the Greater Sydney area. In terms of
what did you make of that? What did you personally make of that?
It enraged me, actually. I was appalled at the selfishness, the ignorance, the pig-headedness of thousands of people putting the rest of Sydney at risk. And, you know, the deadly irony being that this so-called protest was really about being kept into lockdown, was really only going to extend the lockdown. You know, so, I mean, it was made up of a whole lot of people. There were anti-vaxxers, there were religious zealots, there were, you know, the so-called freedom fighters. And I think a scary thing, in a way, was there was this mob mentality that extended from the beginnings of the march and gathered people along the way, much, I think, like what we saw in America when the Trump supporters bared down on Capitol Hill.
So it does seem to be progressing, doesn't it? It does seem to be moving into something really quite different when you've got the 5G people and the and a whole bunch of issues coming together under one conspiracist fold. Can I ask you, Brent, if I may, you have a son. How's he and how's homeschooling going?
Look, again, you know, I'd be lying if I said it was a breeze there. This has to be, I mean, I know it's different for everyone. And some people are cut out for it a lot better than others. I'm finding it to be one of the hardest things I've ever done, this homeschooling business. And it is really, really testing. Certainly when you've got a child that, I mean, my boy's 8, so he needs to be supervised. And, you know, he's used to dad and at home and all that, and in school being something that the teachers are doing at school. And to have dad, because I'm pretty much doing it because I'm able to do it from because I'm a creative, so I'm at home anyway. Although I have lost my work, but that's a whole other kettle of fish, as a DJ and sorts. But it's coming back to the teaching. It's hard, you know, trying to get the kid to focus, and you know, trying to get what we feel deem as necessary to done with the curriculum, and at the same time trying to kind of keep stress levels, you know, at a minimum. It's not easy.
Yeah, I go back to when we had our first big lockdown here, and it got a bit boring, but I was a feeling of triumph when we came out of that one. But I just remember that real downer when we went into the second lockdown. Yeah. It was only 18 days long or something, but there was I felt a completely different atmosphere in the community and differently myself. So I can only imagine what it's like for a state that's, you know, been in and out of lockdown of sorts and now having to go back into at least 4 weeks, possibly longer. They've already been in, you know, like it is mentally tough.
It is to
deal with. Like, just you feel deflated. I felt deflated in the second one last year, and it was only like 2.5 weeks after having done 7 weeks.
I mean, it doesn't help, you know, with, I think in the first big lockdown last year for Sydney, you know, a lot of people were in shock, and there was a lot of kind of compliance. Whereas I'm finding there's less compliance with a lot of the community this time round. Some people are, you know, because they're sick of this idea of going back into lockdown, they're not complying as much, and so the mandatory mask wearing is being not adhered to, and people are, you know, they're sneakily visiting other households when they shouldn't be doing that, and so there's this, you know, there's a sense of kind of apathy as well.
Right.
I'm not saying it's everyone at all, but there's, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are doing the good thing, the right thing.
How much, and this is a bit of a stereotype here, I lived in Sydney for 4.5 years.
Yes.
How much is there, forgive me, Australian friends, slightly anti-authoritarian attitude playing into this? Because they seem to be slightly more anti-authoritarian than New Zealanders are.
In your view, Andrew?
In my view, a stereotype, forgive me, people, but that's just my observation.
I think this anti-authoritarianism is actually kind of almost widespread. I think a lot of social media aggravates this, you know, echo chambers and all that kind of thing going on, and I, you know, much more than it ever used to exist, and it feeds on itself. I think perhaps, you know, the bigger the city, the more likely it, you know, they're going to come out of the woodwork.
Let's bring Nalini in. Have you got a question or a thought?
Yeah, well, I hope they're asking themselves, what did we actually achieve? Because I don't think they achieved anything except for the scorn of the country. And I do feel sorry for the police, because the police know that they cannot actually identify an organiser as such, so they can't pursue any legal case against them. They can issue infringements, and I understand they have. I'm just hoping that this group looks back at the last protest march and says to themselves, well, actually, we didn't really achieve anything. People didn't like it. Let's just not.
I know. That's exactly my thoughts, you know, and the wish they'd had a bit of foresight before they went and did this, because, I mean, it's obviously going to be a couple of weeks before we probably see the real ramifications of their behaviour, just in the nature of the way the virus develops,
just,
I should say.
Yeah, just finally, Brink, can I ask you, I mean, this is, it must have been a bit of a shocker, really. I mean, we can all relate to this, and we're all with you when you hear, you know, there's going to be an announcement and it's going to be 11 a.m. or a 1 p.m. as it is here, and you've got a
four-week
lockdown. And not that I want to sort of scare anybody here, but they don't seem to be getting on top of this outbreak, and a couple of epidemiologists have said in the Sydney Morning Herald that they wouldn't be surprised if the lockdown went a lot longer. What other concerns do you have around that?
My own sanity. It is frightening in that way, and the uncertainty, and yet at the same time, there's a fair amount of fear mongering that kind of exists as well.
Sure.
Look. We all hope that it's over as sooner than later. I mean, we've all got other concerns. I mean, I run a film festival which is meant to be happening at the end of September, and I'm already having to try and think about ways of maybe possibly postponing that. But then again, you know, who knows when? And as we also know, it only takes a few community transmissions to happen again, and then all the good work's undone, and you're back at square one again.
And longer closures, longer lockdowns.
Yeah, well, the biggest problem is the compliance. But compliance becomes less and less the longer a lockdown goes and more times it's repeated. If someone said to us here in New Zealand, OK, 1 week lockdown, we go, oh, OK, I can handle a week. If someone said 6 weeks, people would go, some people would go, no, I'm not going to bother.
Sure. Hey, Bryn, kia ora, and all the very best to you and whānau, and thank you very much for being with us on the panel.
Yeah.
Look, Bick, thank you for letting me be on the show and giving you a little insight into where we're at, and you know, we all just hope for the best.
Go well. That is Bryn Tilley there, New Zealander living in Sydney. It's 15 to 5. The panel, RNZ National, Andrew Clay and Nalini Baruch with me this afternoon. Now, this is very interesting research here. There appears to be overwhelming support to make KiwiSaver a mandatory savings scheme, Pena Pena Putia, according to an investment sector survey. A survey of 2,000 adults by the Financial Services Council, the FSC, shows overwhelmingly support to increase the role of KiwiSaver, with nearly 80% supporting compulsion and 73% supporting an increase in contribution rates. The research also found 64% were deeply worried about not having enough savings for retirement. To discuss is Financial Services Council Chief Executive Richard Kilpin, who says that we just can't slow march our way to retirement. To Richard, kia ora.
Kia ora, Wallace.
Very interesting research, this. A huge support for compulsory KiwiSaver. Was that figure a surprise to you?
Well, it is a bit of a surprise, but, you know, just taking on that last conversation that you just rounded out, you know, the sense of people seeing a good idea and going with good policy is really playing through this research. So the notion that if you want to have an adequate and good retirement, you actually need to invest in it, not at the end of your working life, but really at the front end of your working life. And I think some of those things are really playing through the research.
I wonder what we polled here. Yes to compulsory KiwiSaver or no, 2101, and why not? Or you can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. But interestingly, 17% of New Zealanders do not contribute to KiwiSaver at all, and more than 30% contributing only the minimum of 3%. That was a worry to you?
Yeah, look, it is, because, you know, if you take a set-and-forget approach,
So the notion is people will participate, contribute, and then just kind of forget about it. Actually, anything and everything in our financial lives kind of needs active work. And so the more visible and the more active people are, so much the better they'll be in the long term. And in some ways, it's almost borrowing from today and investing like for your longer term future. And that's hard. That's pretty hard for people to do because, you know, we live in a very much let's have it now kind of community and society. So it's, yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Nalini?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a yes for you?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely, definitely compulsory, just so I don't feel the pain. It goes before I actually realise it's been debited. And $25,000 is not a lot to take into your retirement. So,
which is the average. Absolutely. That's the average KiwiSaver balance. Andrew?
That's true.
I mean, it's a smart idea. There's no doubt about it. You do have that philosophical argument of, it's my money. Why should you be telling me what I should be doing with my money? I can decide. I'm not a child with a piggy bank where mum telling me I have to put a dollar in there
every
week.
Well, let's just go there to Richard right now. Thank you for bringing that up. Shouldn't people have the choice of what to do with their own money, Richard?
Well, of course we should. You know, the flip on that is when there's something in the collective good, the community good, and then the personal good, which is really what KiwiSaver is. You know, there's $82 billion of collective good put away, which equates to the $25,000 on average. By the time our kids and grandkids get to retirement, will NZ Super be available in the way that it currently is? And if, right. And even if it's not, or even if it is, it's what kind of retirement do we want to have? So, absolutely, I totally get that.
Whoa, look at the response. Look at the text driving through, and they all say one thing. Yes, absolutely, we've continually nagged our children in their 20s that this is insurance for the future. Just a really big response. Yes to compulsory. Living for now, some have nothing to spare. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, I'm 50 and wish I had started saving way before I did, but just didn't get it until I was too late. So if there is such a groundswell, if this survey here and what we're seeing here in our texts, why isn't it being done?
Look, that's a great question. The reason why we've done this research is KiwiSaver's 14 years old. We think it's time to probably reflect and review on the settings, make sure that they're right or not, and if they're not, what do we have to do? I mean, ultimately, it's a decision for government, clearly, and we're hoping that this debate, and it's great to see your open lines working so effectively, but to stimulate the debate so that people making the decisions comfortably can do that, knowing that people are supportive, and I think ultimately that's where good policy lands.
It's interesting. I'm surprised at what seems to be a response, you know, to say
it's 96%.
Yeah, it's
96% people are saying yes to mandatory KiwiSaver.
That's interesting because what effectively you're talking about here, and it's an ugly word to use, is a kind of a tax. It's a kind of a tax, just, you know, on an individual level. So people who are all for this are actually kind of saying yes to a tax me for my own future. That's what they're saying. It'll be paid back to me personally.
Andrew,
is not a bad thing. I agree with that. But it's interesting what I'm just fascinated that they're saying yes to it in so overwhelming numbers because most people say no, lower taxes. But they're actually saying yes to one, really, in essence.
In the past, I'm sure I've heard reports that prove that New Zealanders are really not very good savers and that maybe we need this to make us and turn us into good savers. I have a question to Richard. Richard, the article I read indicated that something like 25% of the respondents didn't actually know how much they needed for retirement. And a similar percentage, I think, didn't know what the balance of their KiwiSaver was. So we need to do a little bit of work to inform people once they're part of it as to what it's going towards and what their balance is. As a way of incentivizing. I can tell you this from experience. When I first started contributing, the first 5 years were tough. I really couldn't see where it was going, you know, as in what it was going to be worth in 25, 30 years' time. Sort of by year eight, it really started to gel. I could see that. And I can now see what it's going to be like in 25 years' time. And that is enough proof for me to say this should be compulsory.
Final thought, Richard?
Yeah, look, both great thoughts. to Andrew's point, I wouldn't call it a tax. I'd call it an investment in your future. It is your money. Oh. It's just that you get it later.
Whatever word you need to use to make it work. But yeah, because tax was not a pretty word for most people. Yep.
No, and then look, the literacy piece, the how do you know and how do you get people engaged is so important. Because Nalini is exactly right. There are so many people disengaged from their money lives, and yet it's kind of so critical to all their life choices. So that is fundamental.
All right. Goodness me, really big response to this. So looking forward to reading more out across the week. But for now, Financial Services, Kaifa Kahari, Richard Kilpin, thank you very much for being with us. It is 7 to 5 on the panel RNZ National. We might do a second bite at that maybe on Friday afternoon.
I've got no idea how much I've got in there.
Yeah,
not a clue.
I do. Yeah. I do.
So you're both in KiwiSaver.
Yeah, yes. But when I was just doing live entertainment work, I wasn't in it. And I tell you right now, in the entertainment world, there'd be a lot of people that do not have KiwiSaver. I tell you right now.
I tell you why I do, Andrew.
Yes.
My provider is a bank. I won't say which bank, but my provider is a bank. And every time I log into my internet banking, it tells me what my KiwiSaver balance is.
Yeah, no, I think I've got the same thing. I just haven't paid any attention to it.
If I had a spare $50, I actually put it into that account.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Right.
I do.
Okay, I joined my grandchildren up when they got the $1,000 incentive, and each Christmas birthday I put a smallish amount in, as do their parents. Mm-hmm. We are not wealthy, but when they start after-school jobs, a little will go in from their wages. It's just a habit, says Jenny. Now, finally, the Farry family has been selling clothes in Aotearoa since the late 19th century when Gerard Farry's granddad moved from Lebanon to Dunedin in 1892, selling clothing and goods door-to-door, reports Stuff's Mandy Tay. His sons carried on the business and opened retail stores in Gore, Invercargill, Wellington, Auckland, Dunedin. But times have changed, and this week it was announced that the family's last remaining store in Wellington will shut its doors later this year. With me now is Farry's menswear owner, Gerard Farry. Gerard, kia ora.
Hello, Wallace. How are you?
Nice to have you on. I'm very well. And anybody who's across the country, but specifically Dunedin, because I lived in Dunedin for many, many years, and I know that this was this company was really much the heart and soul of Dunedin retail.
Well, that's kind of you to say. Thank you.
No, absolutely. It's only fair to say. But so why have you decided it's time to close the doors?
Yeah, sure. I just want to start by saying it was actually my great-grandfather that came over. It's okay. But no, so why am I checking? Well, it's been a difficult decision because, as you've just mentioned, it's been a big part of our family history. But I suppose, you know, there's a lot of factors. It's not just one factor. And not all of the commercial factors. Some of it's personal. But my father and brother, who I was in business with, both passed away in the last 5 years. And so that's part of it. But also it's just getting a bit harder. And I'm not probably enjoying it as much as I once did. I feel like it's time to call it a day and try something new. Our business, we moved from the South Island to come up to Wellington because it was a suit town. We saw an opportunity because everyone in Wellington wore suits. And unfortunately, that's no longer the case. And it's become more challenging. And if the dress down... casualisation of work has meant that not only suits aren't worn, but even jackets. Everyone's wearing jeans and T-shirts, and I just can't do the turnover to pay the CBD rent selling that sort of low-ticket item.
Well, you had some pretty sharp clothes. You do have some pretty sharp clothes, but I'm looking at the likes of Andrew Clay here, who's really dumbed down fashion.
people like me. You need more people like John Campbell, who would go to bed in a suit, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But aren't you... I'm not concerned, but will you have some regret? Because trends go in cycles, right? And, you know, the suit will make a comeback like every other fashion has. Will you, you know, when it does, will you be...
Maybe I'll come back.
Well, there you go. Okay. Yeah, good stuff.
Look, I don't see that, to be honest. I think that it's not really a fashion thing. I think it's just the way people do conduct themselves in work now. The environment in the workplace has become more casual, even just the way that the employer deals with their staff. And I think that's reflective in how people will dress. So... I think there's always going to be a market for high-end clothing, and there's always going to be a market for a nice suit, but there'll just be less of it. And, there's always going to be business to be done. So as I said, it's not just a commercial decision for me, but it is a hard decision because it's I'll probably miss it a lot. Because it's all I've ever done, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
let's bring Nalini, because we're close. Nalini,
Jared, I feel for you. The Baruch family have worn your suits. My late father-in-law did. My husband did as well.
Nice.
Probably
Thank
still
you.
Has one of your suits in the in the cupboard at home.
Yes.
But I understand the trend is not there anymore, and I'm hoping it'll come back. But what are you going to do in the meantime?
Well, so I've got a bit on my plate right through to the middle of next year. And then I have got a few interests outside of farriers and business, so I might try and develop those. But I have got a few options, but I'm going to take some time out. I'm going to take a few months I want to make sure that whatever I do is something I'm going to enjoy, can get my teeth into.
Go well, Jared.
Wish
and,
you well.
And thanks for all the clothes.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for your interest.
Exactly.
From 1892 to now, Ferries. And that's the show. Andrew Clay and Nalini Baruch, you've both been wonderful this afternoon. Kia ora.
Same. Thank you,
Wallace.
So have you, Wallace.
I'm Wallace Chapman and back tomorrow.